Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's 12, so, so I'll start. Anyway. Yeah? Okay.
If the top of it starts trying to hurl itself towards you, grab
Oh, I see. Yeah, all right. Thanks. It's kind of sticky, too. Okay. Yeah, anyway, so my name is Vicky Navratilova, and this is my, presentation on today's modern network killing robot using the best and obnoxious PowerPoint technology. So, and I work at the University of Chicago, so, like, my coworker said, if you want to hack us, please do. It keeps us employed. So.
Can we get the ability to hire?
Is that recording?
Yay! I can finally be famous! So anyway, so my talk was about denial of service, basically. Like, for some reason, people like to hurt each other, and I suppose in caveman times, they do it with large rocks, and eventually people evolved to using computers, and they became too far away for each other to hit each other physically, so you had to take each other's network connection out, because there's always that need to, like, piss other people off. So eventually people came up with a Smurf attack, which was basically you send a bunch of not Smurfs. You send, yeah, they can be deadly, but you basically send pings with a broadcast, with either faked return addresses or broadcast addresses, the return address. So then when they respond, then everyone's broadcasting into everyone else. Yeah, slightly drunk and tired, so that's why I'm sort of incoherent. But at any rate, and then there was the ping of death, where you'd send either a really large ping and it would kill something. Eventually they fixed that, or you just, like, flood people with lots of pings. And this is the other kind of Smurf attack. They crawl in through the wires and come out. So eventually people figured out how to block against that. People would block pings at the firewalls, or they would add flags to pings. You had to either run it as root to do broadcast pings, or you had to have a special flag. So there was, like, a little bit more resistance to being able to ping flood somebody. So eventually people came up with distributed denial of service tools, which were really famous because they took out Yahoo and CNN and I think eBay for, like, 6 hours at a time. So it freaked out a bunch of people, and then it, like, became a media made David Dietrich into a media darling because he analyzed a lot of them and did really extensive write-ups. These were kind of hard to use. They had, like, hard to pronounce names like Stacheldracht, and they ran on weird ports, and they were that's my cell phone. So basically, they had some paranoia features in there that made them harder to use. So if you got your command line wrong, then they could be programmed to delete themselves and all the other drones. And I should probably explain how these work. What you do is you'd have a master, and then you'd hack into machines individually, usually, and then place the drone program on the machines. And once you had a good set of, like, I don't know, 10 or 20 machines somewhere on a university network or someplace else with high bandwidth, you could trigger them, and then all of them would flood a target at once. Sometimes they'd have spoofed return addresses, so then it was harder to block at routers, and people were like, wow, this is crazy, spoofed return addresses, how do we block this? Eventually they figured out how to block that at routers and big places like UUNET and other ISPs. So these aren't so much of a threat anymore. But they were much more devastating than the old DOS tools. But they were a little bit harder to use. So eventually, immigrant child labor became so expensive for hacking into each machine individually, people started automating DDoS tools. I think eventually people got lazier, and they wanted them to be easier to use. I sort of wonder what happened if Apple would write DDoS tools. They'd be, like, really pretty and really devastating. But since... Yeah, that would be the problem. So you have to get Wozniak to write something. I was designed a nice DDoS interface. So eventually the people thought, like, where do all hackers hang out? IRC. Well, let's just put everything on IRC. And let's see. Oh, so these are harder to spot because all the commands are sent through legitimate IRC traffic. So if you have IRC on your network, it's hard to spot if it's legitimate or not legitimate unless there's like large amounts of DCC traffic, and then you're wondering like what could that be, because a lot of people don't DCC, they just go on there to like have affairs and things like that. And there's been no media coverage because there hasn't been any high-profile takedown of any website. So a lot of people think that DDoS tools kind of went out of style when you had CNN and everybody hacked. So people don't know about these, and then some sysadmins don't know what to look for them and how to fight against them. So these can use spoofed source addresses, but they don't really have to because it's so cheap to send something to test a bunch of machines for 445 and see if they have no admin password and put a bot on there, that if somebody discovers one of your clients, you just replace it with another one really easily. So it's not so much of a bad thing if you don't use a if you're lazy and you don't use a spoofed source address and people find you. It's also harder to filter because there's legitimate traffic coming from all over. It's not like you're just trying to find spoofed traffic. Because spoofed traffic, you can do things like, say, like block all outgoing traffic from your network that doesn't have a legitimate, that isn't within your IP subnet or has like a 10-dot or other non-routable traffic IP address. So those effects don't work against the DOSNet tools usually. So since all of it operates on IRC, that would be the place you'd think you could go to find the botnet masters, but they can hide in channels and do all sorts of crazy stuff so that average people who don't have a lot of experience with IRC can't see the channels and they can't see the bots. And
I disagree.
Really?
If this is happening on your network, mm-hmm. you can sniff the traffic. If you've got the hint that this machine is not doing something right, mm-hmm. you just look at all the IRC traffic coming from it. And you don't have to be a regular user on the IRC server, you know, subject to the regular limitations. You see all the traffic that that bot sees, which means when it joins its secret channel, you see, you know, the name.
Yeah, but then you need to know what to look for in that, because you're getting all the IRC traffic. And
you're getting all the IRC traffic that the bot is using as it, you know, it connects to IRC as a user.
Yeah.
It's only going to do relevant things.
Yeah, I'm thinking, though, if, like, you're on a really large network, then that's sort of like a needle in the haystack unless you have, like, good signatures and you know what you're looking for.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a good deal. Also, I think I've seen, you know, bots on IRC many, many years earlier than, you know, the automated infection.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, the IRC thing and then, you know, Trinu's stock of drug and then the automated infection. The IRC is much older.
Well, yeah, there's a... I'm going to mention that, like, AirDrop has been around since 1993, but it seems like it's mostly been used for good, I'm guessing. Up until they came out with all these other tools. The thing is, like, there's only like four or five ways you can really hide a channel and hide the people in it. So once you know them, then you know how to find them. But if people don't know that they're supposed to look for them, then it becomes harder because it's not blindingly obvious.
But IRC operators are all about helping you. If you can just, you know, look at traffic, see what. Your IRC operator. Okay, maybe it wasn't so obvious that it was supposed to be a joke. That was a joke. it depends on the net. If you can figure out the channel, like Backorfis had a plugin where it would join IRC and then very quickly shut down that channel, just, you know, eliminated the channel from the major IRC networks.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but everybody's perfect. If you find the channel name.
Okay. Yeah, I read something on, like, Dalnet propaganda saying, like, Dalnet is all about getting rid of botnets, and they have all these secret ways of doing it, but they can't tell you what they are because then you'd know how to get around them, and they're sort of like a secret strike force against botnets. But I don't know anybody on Dalnet who's like, yes, Dalnet is well-run and a place for nice people to hang out. One of the other things about DOSNet tools, like Trinu and Sakodog, pretty much like send a, they do a limited number of things, but DOSNet tools have these nice plugins, so you can send IGMP floods and flood IRC channels and a bunch of other stuff. yeah, so there's a bunch of ways you can infect machines with DOSNet tools. It's pretty standard stuff. Like, yeah, you send a Trojan file through email free attachment, get them to click on it. Some web browser exploits where you can download a small executable and that will download the rest of the stuff. A lot of stuff we see on our network are people who never set their admin passwords, or they set it to admin or guest or something like that. So it's pretty easy to see somebody connecting to port 445. You can, and then IRC traffic starts coming out, and you're like, okay, I guess that's been owned. And then soon after, it starts like flooding somebody. So those are all kind of easy to find in that case. Oh, and then they also take advantage of things that have been infected by other things, like sub-7. Yeah, I was going to say, like, not all bots are recent. There's EggDropBot, which has been around seemingly forever. And it's still being used today, but I suppose now it's like a recognized vector of evil. So then we have GTBot. There's, like, two main bots. There's GTBot and SDBot that are really popular. And they're all basically MIRC clients, only they're modified to do some extra stuff. Like, they hide on your desktops. So usually you don't see them. And they use plugins, so that's useful. The GTBot, SDBot, they connect to a channel on IRC network, and they wait for the botmaster to message them. And this is an example of the commands they use. And they're friendlier than Trino and StackleDoc, because if you type like bang scan, and then you don't know the rest of the usage, it'll come back to you and say, this is how you run the command. So it's pretty user-friendly. So anyone can run a bot net because it's got a better user interface than before, which might explain why they're so popular. And the way it hides itself is it uses a program called Hidewinder to hide itself, but it makes sure that they're starting up every boot by changing a registry key up that first one. That says like startup every time, and then just modifies a bunch of MIRC registry key values. So if you were to look for this bot, then you would look for those registry keys. I mean, they can be varied too, from bot to bot or variation of bot. But you can just delete the registry key to make it start up, and then you don't have to really bother with the MIRC registry keys. There's also this company called Lockdown Corporation, and they have a pay program called Lockdown 2000. They also have a bunch of other cheesy things called like Hacker Tracker, and for $10 you can have them run a traceroute and a whois and a ping and do an errand lookup, and they give you all the information on that hacker. They even give you their MAC address, which is like their fingerprint. So
they're brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. Well, they have a free tool, too, called SWATIT, which basically probably just looks for acknowledged strings of basic GT and SD bot file names and things like that. So if you're really lazy, you can just download that. But if you have a botnet on your machine, odds are that you have lots of other problems, and you should probably just reinstall instead of trying to remove the botnet, because you already have other backdoors, most likely, or you have a weak password, or you have some other way that they got in the first place. So depending on how much forensics you want to do, you should probably just reinstall your machine. Otherwise, if you really want to get rid of the botnets, you have to kill the process first before you get rid of the file. Otherwise, if they discover that they've been recognized, like if you type in the window, or if they notice one of their files are missing or something, they can be triggered to delete all drives from C or deltree-y for C through E and do a bunch of other stuff to just mess up your machine. So if you ever find one and it pops up, you have to close it with the X or use Task Manager to close it, or you delete the, I don't know if you could delete the registry key and then if it would notice or not, and then you reboot. But once you've killed the process, you need to look for MIRC INI files, because since it's an MIRC client, MIRC clients need to have MIRC INI file in the same directory as the client executable. So a lazy way is to look for MIRC INI files and then look for the botnet in that directory, which could have like, it could be hidden attribute, or could have, if you hidden in the Windows font directory, it could have like a font-like looking name. Otherwise, people can hex edit stuff and have MIRC look for something other than MIRC.ini, so it just changed the file name. So that's not always a foolproof thing either. Oh, yeah, and don't use a bot for chat, just in case anyone has ever attempted to do that. SDBot is pretty much the same thing. Only this McAfee and F-Secure have latched onto it, and they claim that they can delete it with their antivirus programs. Also, if you want to see what IRC servers they're joining to, you could probably do a strings or something on the executable, or on the MIRC file, rather.
Just point something out.
Yeah?
Usually, not only do they have the server they connect to, but they'll also have the name of the master who they trust.
Okay. Refreshing.
It was epoxy.
This was also the case with AgOrpus.
Yeah.
Because one of the hilarious things is, I would play dumb and let somebody try and send me, my movie.exe.
Uh-huh.
And it's a AgOrpus infector. And then just look at the end of the file, and it contains, the port and path that it's supposed to run on. Most of these people are so stupid, they accidentally infect on themselves. I just connect back to them on the same port and password. Look at the file, you can figure out who the bot trusts, and then just join IRC as them.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Down the botnet, whatever.
Yeah, StuckoDark had all these weird things where you have to have a password. If you typed in the password wrong, it would delete itself, and all these paranoid things. But I guess here, everyone can own everybody else's botnet, more or less.
All these are so stupid. It's all clear text in the exe, or in the ini.
Yeah, there's one or two that are doing encryption, but that was really rare, and most people wouldn't go through the trouble of finding those. They just download whatever, get the RAR file, unrar it, click on the executable. It's not doing anything. Oh, yeah, I have to send it to other people. That sort of thing. That's a good selling point. Oh, so these are ways to detect a botnet on your network if you're looking at it from a high-level view where you have access to routers and things like that. So this is what we do, basically, on the university network. If you subscribe to a mailing list like FIRST, there's Forensic Incident Response something team. I think there are a bunch of universities and corporations, and you have to become a member and sign some contract and wear a T-shirt or something, and then you get subscribed to the mailing list. And then there's this secret list called NSP that I'm not even on, but a friend of mine is on. And on both of those, there's people that are listening on backbones of the internet looking for botnets, and then they'll send mail saying, got bot, and it says, if you have IRC traffic going to these subnets or these IP addresses, then you have a botnet on your network. So you basically look at it and say, you can either say, hey, that's my network, or you can go through your flows and look to see what the IRC traffic is going to. Otherwise, you just look for flows in general to port 6667. You can look for timing. So if you notice incoming attacks and then password guessing connecting to 445, and then right afterwards, a minute later, the machine starts going out to IRC, that's pretty much a conclusive enough evidence for us to pull the machine from the network and contact the owner and say, hey, you have a botnet on your network, on your machine. Reinstall, reformat, reinstall, and then call us, and we'll turn your network port back on. Otherwise, you can use an IDS. I've not used Snort to detect botnets. I got the feeling that they would get a lot of stuff, but not everything. So it depends on how lazy you are. And if you say, oh, Snort detected stuff, and then that's good enough for me, and you don't want to look for more stuff, then if you can do that. But some botnet variations encrypt their traffic, which makes Snort kind of useless. Also, people can just change strings, so all the stuff that is being looked for by Snort can be changed by the person that's writing it. But then most people are too lazy to do that. Also, what we do is we have Packeteer devices. So what they do is they do bandwidth limiting for things like file sharing programs, but they also look for people who are using the most DCC bandwidth. So those are generally people that are either trading wares or they have a botnet client on them and they're flooding people. So those are both good reasons to turn off the network port and get them off our network, have them reinstall, reformat, reinstall. Well, that's why we turn the port off and then call them. And sometimes we get professors who are like, you can't take me off the network. And, yeah. So it's a case-by-case basis. A lot of times just students who are like, please don't expel me. That's fun. They'd be like, we're going to send you to the deans. We're going to tell them what you're doing. Your parents are going to know. Do you think this is a good use of their $40,000 a year? And they're like, no. But yeah, they're like spoiled rich kids. So nice to play with.
Do you have any students from the University of
Ohio? So, yeah, otherwise, if you really, other obvious ways are to look for machines that are actively flooding other things. So if something has a lot of UDP or ICMP traffic and also has IRC traffic, it's probably being controlled by botnet. Otherwise, if you hang out on IRC Lite, you might notice that there's bots or there's people that connect and they have really weird nicknames and you kick them and they come back and they never say anything and those are probably bots. Those can be botnets though for trading winners or file sharing or a bunch of other things, but it's also characteristic of a DOSNet botnet bot. So otherwise, if you want to get a bunch of cheesy hacker tools, you can go to lockdown.corp. GGBot information is a pretty good website explaining a bunch of stuff. The last URL here is kind of nice. It has like 60 to 80 different variants of GDBot and SBot and FrozenBot and a bunch of other bots and gives you, you can download them from there. So if you want to run your own botnet, then that's the place I'd recommend going, is it's like one-stop shopping. yeah, that's the end of my talk. Any questions? Anyone want to share stories about botnets and how their lives have been tragically altered forever?
Forum of incident response and security
teams. Oh, okay.
Oh, they sound egotistical.
Yeah. But they have conferences in Hawaii, so it's like I don't know. Well, you just get your employer to pay for them, I think. You say like, "We just joined them. We have to be there to show our commitment to the organization." Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I guess that's it. And yeah.